Good evening and welcome to Mondo Eros. My name is Stephen Otero and I am your host. And this is our very first broadcast here on bbsradio.com on the new adult channel. And I welcome you and I'm glad to have you listening to me. We're going to be doing some interesting shows here, having what I would think is some fascinating conversations and interviews with some of the leading figures today in sexuality here in this country. Now, how can I promise you that all this happened? Well, first of all, let me introduce myself. I'm Stephen Otero, and I'm currently the booking manager at Sexy Spirits in New York City, from where I'm broadcasting. What is Sexy Spirits? Well, Sexy Spirits is a not-for-profit, sex-positive educational center which specializes in the cultivation of sexual energy through tantric and Taoist sexual cultivation practices. It's a place where people gather to learn and to instruct in many different disciplines. And it was founded in 1999 by Richard Anton Diaz, who henceforth on this show will be known as Anton. And we're very fortunate and lucky to have, as our first guest tonight, Anton. And so I'd like to welcome Anton right now.
Thank you, Stephen.
I'm really grateful on that you're with me here tonight.
I'm glad to be here, and I'm really glad to be here supporting your debut show, and I know it's going to be great, and people are going to absolutely love the information that you get to bring to them.
Thank you. And and it's going to just be, I think it's going to be a really fantastic hour that we're going to have here, because we have in our own private conversations in Anton's office have had many interesting discussions. So I'd like to start with first and foremost, if you can define Sexy Spirits for us a little bit more further.
Sure. Sexy Spirits began as a inspiration from the work that I did with Master Montauk Chia on sexual energy cultivation way back in 1999. And when I learned these incredible ancient Chinese practices and sexual energy that were practiced by celibate monks and handed down through the ages and finally brought to our culture through Master Montauk Chia, I thought this was really the cream of the crop in terms of bringing sex education, especially to our culture, who is so, in my opinion, kind of barraged with so much sexual information that really doesn't present itself in a way that people can really integrate it into their lives on all levels. So at the time, I was very inspired that people would want to know this work. Sexy Spirits began as a concept that we were basically infinite beings from the very beginning, and that by nature of having a male or female body, that we were infinite beings that took on a sexiness to us, a sexuality to us, by virtue of the fact that we were occupying either a male or female body. So to simplify that idea, it's just the idea that instead of being human beings who are trying to be very spiritual and perfect in a more spiritual realm, this idea approaches it the other way around and says that we're already infinite beings, and that our basic challenge is to see how we fit that enormous infinite that we are into a body that's either male or female, and then by that virtue is sexual.
That makes almost sense. Sounds like as if one could say that we're perfect just from where we are.
Well, absolutely. That's how I see it. I see that when we begin to look at our situation in the world from a position of already being perfect and already having all the answers that we want and already being where we want to be, that we certainly can have a lot more fun getting to where we want to go next.
I remember you telling me that, now, of course, the idea that everything is perfect just the way it is was a concept that was developed by Dr. Victor Barranco.
And that's right.
And that when you were the very first time you heard that, it had a profound effect upon you.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not sure it's the very first time I heard it. I found it interesting when it was said, and the way it was presented in a what's called a MARC group that that their organization holds in different communities, they said, we operate on two belief systems, and one is that everything is perfect as it is, and we'd like you to try that for the time that you're going to be here. So I liked the idea that I could just try on this concept for 2 or 3 hours and wasn't in any way forced or pressured to take this on as a philosophy or as a belief system.
So consciousness change, changing one's ideas, one's belief systems, that seems to be a really important part of your work and your life.
Absolutely. I can tell you something profound that I think would be interesting to share, and that is at one time I was a notorious Scientologist at one time.
Really?
And, I was involved with the field of Scientology for about, a good amount of time and had some really great tools that were handed to me. But I actually learned how to be what was called an auditor, how to actually process people the way I wanted to be processed, well, towards states of clear and all that. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because, you know, we learned how to get people to contact traumatic experiences in their life, which are what most psychiatrists do. You know, they get them to look at the trauma and probably talk about it and discharge it. But what was unique about what I learned with my training in Scientology was that you could contact the trauma and you could talk about it for as long as you wanted to, but it really never released itself until you were able to locate the belief system or the consideration or the postulate, as they call it, that you made about that trauma. And I saw it time and time again that when I was able to help people contact trauma, that once they were able to uncover the very exact belief that they made about that, the whole thing cleared. And that was very impressive. It was very impressive to see that it's not so much getting shot in the arm by a stray bullet that's the trauma in our lives. It's the conclusion or the belief that we make about that ends up having the power of trauma in our life. So I hope you can see from that example that, you know, from a very early stage in my own development, I began to see how powerful our thoughts and our beliefs have to do with how we feel about the world.
Absolutely. And now you're also working with another method as well now to do that.
That's right. I work with a method which I call empowerment dialogues.
Yes.
And that came from two teachers. One was Barry Kaufman of the Option Institute, and the other was his teacher, Brian Mancusi, who developed the method way back in the 1960s, right here in New York City, called the Option Method. And both of these are accessible on the internet. And what I love about this dialogue system is that you can enter into conversation with people about issues that they have that are putting them in a situation that they're uncomfortable or unhappy, and you simply enter into inquiry to have them discover the beliefs and the choices that they are making that is actually causing that unhappiness. So a lot of people think that, you know, the outside world or the external stimulus is what causes us, you know, what we feel, but like I said before, when you get people to realize it's the beliefs and the choices of how they want to think about that that actually lead them to feel the way they do, then it's a pretty actually empowering process to discover.
Well, it's reminds me a lot of what Robert Anton Wilson talked about and wrote about in his works, how belief systems, or what he calls BS, are prisons.
Sorry about that.
I think I lost you for a moment.
Oh, okay, I'm there.
Yeah, I hear you now. Yeah, and that that they are, you know, that they are constructs.
Yeah, I believe that. It's certainly, you know, whether we believe it or not, it's certainly an empowering position to move into.
Yes.
Because it means that we basically are at cause over the world and over the life that we live.
And I see that, you know, you really live this out. You do this in a way that I think is perhaps one of the most, has most integrity that I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of different people and I've seen a lot of different examples of it. And I really want to, you know, compliment you on that.
Well, thank you, Steve.
And I'm not just saying that just because I work there. Because, you know, I have known Anton before I worked for him and working with him, and I just see that, you know, he really is a man of his word, and he really he's a guy who talks the talk and walks it. And he walks it in a really elegant manner too. So
well, thank you. I'll take all of that, Stephen.
Absolutely. And so what I want to get to also is we were at a pretty, I would think it was interesting, I don't know how you felt about it, but last Friday night, we went to this thing called Sex in America.
Uh-huh.
That was sponsored by both the Open Center and the Huntington Press. And I was wondering what you thought about that. And also in a more larger sense, I think we've touched on some of this, but what do you think about the state of sex in America?
The conversation as it went,
mm-hmm.
I was a little bit disappointed in that.
Me too.
Yeah, I didn't think it went as deep as I would have liked it to.
I would say personally, you know, they could have had a lot more if they just had all the people who were in the first two rows of that audience up there on that stage.
Probably. Yeah.
You know, and it was just, you know, I think it was an interesting thing for a mainstream group to put that up there. But in terms of, you know, what it really accomplished, you know, it was interesting. You know, I'm glad that I went. I'm glad I didn't stay home, but I can't say much for that. I think it was a good first effort.
Yes, I believe it
was. But I would definitely like to see more. I'd like to see it more go beyond that.
Yeah. I think that we have to talk, when we talk about sexuality, you know, I think right now a lot of the talk and discussion on the topic of sexuality is a backlash toward the repression of sexuality in terms of how our cultures and how religion have set the stage for us. So therefore, what you see in a lot of the discussion with sexuality is, this is what turns me on. This is my pleasure. I want to talk more about this. I want the freedom to feel that it's okay that, you know, I'm turned on by looking at a shoe, or that I'm straight or gay, and that this turns me on. You know, so it's you know, it's kind of a reaction toward a repression, and I guess what we have to do in order to engage in conversation about sexuality in a way that's going to make me happy is see it again from the viewpoint of, hey, we are this perfect being. How, you know, we We are this perfect, infinite being that has a body that's capable of reproducing itself through this activity called sex. And we also have this capacity to engage in sex purely as a pleasure as well. So let's move forward from that point. How can we create from that perfection something new and exciting with this dynamic called sex? So I'd like to hear communication in more in that direction rather than in a direction of how sex is not taught in America as it should be, or not expressed in America it should be. Yes, there is great racism and sexism in America, but to react to it is not going to get us any further. I think we can get further if we acknowledge the perfection within our own bodies of that sexual energy, and we begin from there. And I know that's not in any way shunning the responsibility of the wrongs that are done, but I don't see how we're going to get ourselves out of that loop, so to speak, if all we keep doing is reacting to that wrongness.
Right. That's something that I would totally agree with you. I think that we have to first come from that point of perfection. But then I think also we do, instead of just talking about all the bad stuff, well, let's do something about it. Let's investigate and find what is the source, what is the belief, what is the main belief system,
right,
one thought form that is keeping us in this bondage, and, you know, release it. I don't want to say eliminate it, because that sounds like, but I think if you can find it, what is the source of this thing that has caused all this, and
right,
and release it.
Yeah, I quite agree with you.
Because I think it's something that's very, very old.
Yeah, absolutely. I am totally in agreement with that. I'm glad we get to talk about this, because at first it's not clear. I certainly don't want to be judgmental or in any way condescending in terms of thinking what a good conversation on sex would be, or that I know it all. But now that I think about it, I like the idea that we need to speak from a position of perfection somehow. We need to begin to, you know, we need to sit in a circle and talk about how we have this loving, engaging relationship with our body already, and how we would love to share that into the world with either intimately with another person, or within our community, or outside the world. You know, I think that makes a lot more sense now as I talk it to you. You're pretty good, Steve. I didn't think about the clarity of where I wanted to go until I spoke with you about this.
Well, I'm glad that we're doing this and that we're getting this on tape so it'll be archived.
Absolutely. Does it make sense the viewpoint that I'm going at?
Absolutely. I think we do have to, you know, starting from that point of perfection, I think, you know, is the same place to start with. And I think when you start from there, then you can like kind of work backwards and then find the program. I think if you're going to start from backwards, you're starting as a victim, and you're starting disempowered, and you're just going to be in, you know, your typical, well, this is the adult channel we're on right now, so I'm going to say it. You're starting from a fucked up place, and you're not going to be, it's just going to continue to fester. You're just going to have another, it's just going to turn into a bitch session.
I absolutely agree with you in that if we're going to engage in communication, we need to come from a place of where we already are. And it makes a lot of sense, because if you have a guest speaker who's saying, well, wait a minute, I don't feel that great about sex in my own body, then I think we as a community should dialogue that person. Okay, why don't you? You know, what beliefs are you holding around your body that you don't feel good about it? And I think what that does is it puts the responsibility right back to the guest speaker on, what banner are they trying to carry in their fight for justice in the society for sexuality.
Right, and that fight for justice just becomes a fight for yet another belief system.
Exactly. You know,
and just keeps them in prison, and well, it's another prison. It might be a nicer one, but it's still another prison. It's just,
I absolutely agree. Like, so I think we're on to something there, Stephen.
Well, I think we're going to have a new workshop.
Yeah.
And I think that, well, you do this in your private work with people when you're going to work with someone. You will not work with them until they first do the empowerment dialogue session with you.
Yeah, that's right. When somebody comes to me for a due date or a session, we dialogue. And if I never say that I'm a healer or that I'm going to try and fix them or that I can fix them or that I want to fix them or that I even believe that there's anything wrong with them to be fixed. So what I basically teach is that in the orgasmic provider class, that a man as a giver must be able to see the woman as perfection. So that if she comes to him in any way thinking that she's not perfect or some way injured, she's going to actually, you know, add to sabotaging the session that's been developed to take her to a pretty expanded place. So what I always do is I dialogue the person I'm going to be with intimately first in a due date session where I'm going to give them a massage and stimulate them for a very long period of time and work with their energy. I make sure that they start from a viewpoint that everything is perfect. There's nothing wrong with them. If there's nothing wrong with them the way they are, you know, and if they think there is something wrong, that we need to dialogue them. Why are they unhappy about that? Now, on the other hand, if they think something's wrong with them, but they're perfectly happy and perfectly comfortable, that's okay too. You know, I think the key is, you know, can they see the perfection in their imperfection, if you will?
Yes.
If they can see that, we're still in the same ball game.
Now, I also say that this is something also that a man who aspires to be an orgasm provider for women, this is something that he also has to do for himself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He has to be able to see the perfection in himself. And
he has to also know that when he is providing for a woman in one of these sessions, and these sessions can, you know, they can last various lengths of time from minutes to hours, he has to see himself that what he is doing is his pleasure right then and there.
Exactly.
That he cannot be thinking, well, when's it going to be my turn? What about
right.
me?
Right. He's definitely out of the he's out of the present moment if he's thinking that if he's not seeing the amount of sexual energy that he's experiencing when he's with that woman.
Because I've seen you now do many, many demonstrations of expanded orgasm, and you just look like you are in total bliss what you're doing right then and there.
Oh, absolutely.
That you could not ask for anything more.
Oh, well, I'm getting everything there. There's nothing more to ask for. I'm getting everything I want. I'm very, very fortunate to have those opportunities.
And if any of you who are listening to this who are live in New York City or close to New York City, you should check the calendar, the Sexy Spirits calendar, to see when Anton is going to be doing a demonstration, see him in action, because it's truly an amazing demonstration of art, talent, passion, and perfection all in one moment.
Well, thank you, Steve. I have a demonstration this coming Monday, as a matter of fact, on I think that could be our first Monday in March. Yeah, March 2nd.
Yes,
so So, yeah, I'm looking forward to, I do one every month, and we have a lovely model who volunteers to be on the table and just does a beautiful performance of me, just giving her a beautiful, touching experience. And I explain what I do so that people know exactly what I'm doing. And that took a little time, but it works out perfectly. People love it. I never get tired of doing it, and it's a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Well, you always look rejuvenated. You don't look like at all like you're tired afterwards. You look so charged.
Yeah, I never get. I actually get rejuvenated from the experience. That's absolutely true.
Yeah. Now, you are a man who has lived, I think, a very interesting and fascinating life. What were you doing prior to the founding of Sexy Spirits?
Well, I was a professional ballroom dancer for quite a long time, close to, close to 20 years.
I think you're being a little modest. Weren't you a champion?
Well, I was. I did represent the United States twice at World Championships and won a world title in Mambo. But, yeah, those were great days. I really, and I think what that gave me two things. It really laid the groundwork for what Sexy Spirits ended up being, and that was that I learned about partnership. I learned about how you connect with someone on a very intimate level through dancing. And then the second thing I learned was all about my body as a dancer, having that real intimate connection with my own body and how it moved and how it emotionally felt when I, as a dancer, had to perform. So I think those really laid the groundwork for a lot of the success that I have today with what I do with Sexy Spirit.
And you were also, I believe you also had your own studio for a while, too.
That's right. I had my own dance studio, and not too far from where I live right now here in New York City. And, you know what? I would say I had a great life. I had a very good life. I was surrounded by beautiful women all the time in my field, and I was married at the time as well, and I just got to see the best of the world. It was really a beautiful experience.
Now, you have, I think, one of the, an interesting take on prosperity and abundance, and the film The Secret and the Laws of Attraction has been really a prominent for the last several years. But you, I think you have a really interesting take on it, and you have a secret as to how you become more and more prosperous.
Ah.
And I wonder if you would like to share that.
Well, sure. Well, let's see. If we're talking about prosperous and income, I believe that income is solely determined by necessity level, which means that anybody who's listening to this program, if you really think about the money that you have right now in your life, even in this situation of economic recession that we're going through, you all have exactly the amount of money that you need. Not that you want, but the exact money that you need in order to survive. And the challenge is, in order to get more money in your life, you need to not want it more. You need to need it more. And if we follow on that belief, then when it comes to men and women, I believe that the more feminine energy, the more women or feminine energy that men have in their lives, the happier they are. Because I believe that the women's energy or the feminine energy is kind of the spark, the sparkle and the color and the fun of life. And I think every man tries to, in their lifetime, tries to get as much of this in their life, be it with one woman or many women, it doesn't matter. So when a man connects his desire to make money with his desire for feminine energy, And when he really says, you know what, I really need lots of feminine energy in my life. This is a need that is just as important as food to me. When he plugs into that need, instead of plugging into the want of, well, I've got to make a lot of money because I want to be rich and I want to have this car and I want to have a big enough house that I can have a good wife or somebody turning on. You know, it sounds kind of illogical, but if he does it on that want, he's not going to have as much fun doing it and getting it or success getting it as if he would if he said to himself, I need to have as much feminine energy in my life. So the more I can provide for them, the more I can create a world where they can exist in fun, the more they're going to be around me. In other words, if I go out on a date and I'm with a woman who's working 9 to 5 every day, just like I am, doing the same kind of grueling work, and then I expect her to pay half because she's living kind of exactly I am, well, I'm really not inviting her feminine energy to be in my life. I'm kind of looking at it as a business transaction, and I don't really, you know, there's no way I'm going to tap into her feminine energy. On the other hand, if I take over and I say, hey, for this time that we're together, I am giving you everything you want. I'm supplying your needs. I'm going to be the total man for you for the time that we're together. Well, I think that woman would want to be with him a little bit more than just a dinner, don't you think?
Absolutely. And hasn't your, isn't it true that your income has gone up in the last few years?
Well, it's only because I've entered into a relationship with a woman who has a great appetite for a lot of things. So because I'm dedicated to giving her everything she wants, I create ways to make more money in my life because I've connected that impulse to bring happiness into my life by giving her everything she wants. And that doesn't mean
you do it in a fun way also.
Oh, absolutely. It has to be fun. I'm not going to do it if it's not fun.
Right.
It all has to be fun.
Now, we had an interesting conversation one time about your practices in the shower. And it was this practice that you did that you, I don't want to say that you summoned Rita into your life, but could you go into a little bit of that practice, how you actually created that?
Well, let's see.
You were in the shower.
The shower story is it's a different story about how I found self-love with myself.
Yes.
That's a different story from when I found Rita. I mean, the shower story is a story about it's a practice I used to do when I was just getting out of the most miserable, nightmarish relationship I'd ever experienced in my life. And for the first time, I think I'd always been in a relationship all the way up until my 40s. And for the first time in my life, I just said, stop. You know, there's got to be a different way. There's got to be a perfect person out there that I won't keep doing this pattern of having this relationship where I have something good that goes 5 steps up and then 4 steps back when it ends.
Yes.
So in the shower, I would always shower, and then I would always imagine that she was right across from me. And I tried to, you know, give her the body that I wanted and give her the smile that I wanted. And for the longest time, I would create these gorgeous, I think they first started off as Playboy bunnies, you know? Mm-hmm. And I found that when I got them completed and mocked them up, that it didn't quite work. And I was doing this over and over again and didn't find really that I was getting anywhere, no matter how beautiful I created this person. So one day I got really frustrated and I said, you know what, I'm going to create a woman who is exactly like me, except she's a woman. So I created this, mocked up this picture of myself and gave myself a woman's body and washed the hair. And, of course, I modified it so that I was attracted to it and made sure. But I kept it as close to the feeling of who I was and what I was. And I remember I opened up my arms and embraced that creation that I had done. And all of a sudden, it all hit me. I found the perfect person. I'd never known that all this time I was looking outside of myself for that perfect person, and I never realized that that perfect person was me. It was right there all this time that I had never once thought about first establishing a passionate, mad, loving relationship with myself first. And when that happened, my life changed entirely. I no longer was looking for something outside myself for my own happiness. I was now realizing that I was with the person of my dreams, the best person I could possibly be with. And that anybody that I would meet from that point on would always be second to that person. So that's my shower story. And I would say that was an experience of finding self-love, finding the person within myself that I knew I was going to, that I came into this planet with, and that I was going to leave in the time of death that I would be leaving with as well.
So self-love, I think that, I think that's a hard thing for many people.
Yeah, I would imagine it seems to be. Having been in self-love, I'm not sure why, other than it's a simple choice. I mean, sometimes I'll go through a day and forget how much I have myself to always count on. And I'll start to get nervous or stressed out about something, and then somebody like Rita, my girlfriend, will come along and she'll say, "Do you love yourself?" And I'll check in and I'll say, "Oh yeah, of course." And then it all comes back, you know. So I have that memory of always what it means to love yourself. And my girlfriend actually takes it a lot further. When I get into a disagreement with somebody, or I feel uncomfortable with the way somebody might express themselves or think or behave, she'll say, "Well, can you look at that person from your own state of loving yourself first and see how that feels when you do that?" And it's very interesting that when you begin to look at people that are different from you, and you look at them from the state of self-love for yourself, that you begin to see that person for exactly who they are. You no longer judge them. They begin to be themselves, and you begin to actually love them for who they are. And that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that you can develop this love for others by first checking in and making sure that you have this love for yourself first and foremost.
Absolutely. I mean, it certainly is a wisdom teaching that you cannot love others until you first love yourself. And I think that's the problem with most people. They do not love themselves. They don't have that.
They have it. They just don't make the. I would say that they don't make the choice to do that.
Right. They don't. They haven't overcome the thought form or the thought programming that's preventing them from doing that. I think it's sad. I don't want to stay in that glooming thought form myself.
Right.
So I'm staying right now how much I do love myself.
That's beautiful.
And come back up to that vibration. And it is staying in that kind of high vibration. And I can certainly attest to the fact that I was there the moment that you met Rita, and I could feel that.
Yeah,
I remember.
Felt that. Absolutely.
I said, "Wow."
Yeah, and that was, Rita was certainly a person that came into my life that was everything I was looking for in terms of my next place to evolve. And, that's kind of the story with Rita. Once I loved myself, actually that transition happened about 3 years before I met Rita. But within those 3 years, when I discovered myself in self-love, I began to develop relationship with so many women in my practice that I had all the feminine energy that I ever dreamed about and desired, and it was amazing.
And I can say that, Anton teaches a wonderful course, a lecture, and both a workshop called The Sacred Don Juan. And this is the man, right here.
Yes.
And
yes.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, about Don Juan, the sacred Don Juan, and is that like a contradiction in terms? Because that is, again, something else that we have a sort of a two-faced approach to Don Juan. We admire him from a kind of a sneaky type of thing, but at the same time, we're so ready to condemn that character.
Yeah, the story of Don Juan was he was a lover and he loved all these women. At the same time he forgot about each one. And I guess that was his crime, as if there was one, I'm not sure. I mean, but the story goes that he goes to hell and the devil he says, "What am I doing here?" He says, "Well, he said, what am I doing here? I'm the greatest lover in the world, and I should only be in heaven for all the love that I've given." He said, "Well, you know, I'll certainly give you an exit out of here if you can remember, each person that I bring in front of you that you made love to, their name." And he brought one woman that was a beautiful woman and started to kind of look at him and cry. And he said, "I have never seen that woman." And the devil said, "Well, that's the woman that fully loved you when you made love to her." And then he said, "I'm going to stay here. Thank you." he acknowledged that he had, he acknowledged that he had, in all his great passionate connections, that he had made no connection with anybody. And what the sacred Don Juan does is it is everybody wants to be a Don Juan. Everybody wants to be the ultimate lover. I mean, that's why he was such a endearing character. Every man wants to be the Hugh Hefner of the time or have as many women as possible. How can they do this in such a way that, first of all, first and foremost, all the women in his life are going to be happy, every single one of them? And then secondly, how can he do it in such a way that that it not only makes them happy, but it also inspires men to provide for women in the same way, so that each Don Juan at a time creates more and more happy women. And when you have a world where the amount of happy women keeps increasing, I believe you have a world that guides itself very quickly toward a life and an oriented world. We don't live in that kind of world right now. We live in a more death and pain-oriented one where
Yes. It's
easy to go to war and fight for a cause and die for one, for that matter. We don't prioritize creating a world that any woman would be ecstatic to bring life into. So the sacred Don Juan, in a short sentence, is about giving to woman such total pleasure and ecstasy that she will want to bring life, more life into the world. And in bringing life into the world, that Don Juan even becomes more and more happier because he becomes the recipient of that happier and more fun world that she's created. So there's a little different dynamic than a Don Juan who's just conquering every woman and putting a notch in his belt on every woman he's laying down with. And
right.
As we can see from the parable, with all the notches that Don Juan had, the fact that he couldn't remember any one of them made him realize how meaningless his life really was, that it did not progress him any further into changing the world and giving him some power over his ability to create and forge and shape the world the way he would have been able to contribute to had he used his gift, whatever that gift was, you know?
Mm. And I think that I've heard you speak on that many times, that this is not a world that honors life, that doesn't honor love at this particular moment. It kind of is an honoring death thing. And I don't want to go far off into conspiracy right now, although I could do that, but I'm not going to. And certainly Anton has heard me talking privately this way. But I think it's not a coincidence that that's what's happening.
Probably not.
I think because death is just profitable. And I think we have to make life more profitable.
Yeah, yeah. For whatever reason, and I'm sure there's a lot of anthropological reasons why we have somehow evolved into society that has a God that's in the image of man and has a has this idea that the afterlife or heaven is far more valuable than the moment that we live on this planet right here and now. So it certainly, you know, has created a type of background that has enabled us to live in an easily violent world. I mean, if we look at television, I've always found it fascinating how sometimes I'll turn on the television and I'll see somebody being brutally killed, you know, a movie, a thriller, and somebody gets their throat cut, or and the fact that a child can watch murder on television as a part of a movie, even if it's a person being shot, you know. And this is supposedly R-rated or permissible, yet if they watch two people fornicating, making love or fucking, that's X-rated. That's like, you can't see that, you know. And it's so amazing that the very act that creates life on this planet is considered to be a forbidden act to watch. Yet the act of watching somebody being brutally killed is fine for family TV.
I have always said that the slasher films, the horror films, the Freddy films, I always felt that those films should be X-rated.
Of course, exactly.
I think that they are just they are. I could never watch them, and I get very sick if I watch something like that, so I don't watch that. But knowing a little bit about the history, which I don't think most people know this, there was a very famous film called The Last House on the Left.
Uh-huh.
It was the first film in the so-called slasher genre starting in 1972. What most people don't know about this film is that this film began as a porno movie.
Interesting.
It was financed by porno people. It was produced and directed by porno people. The people who were in it were porn performers of that time period. This is just before Deep Throat. And the last moment, they decided instead of sex, instead of ejaculation, they were going to go for blood. And that's the switch that they made. And the film made lots and lots of money, and it became a sensation. And the people who were in it, the producers and directors, got themselves out of the porn business and into the straight movie business.
Wow.
And that's true of a lot. If you look at the backgrounds of a lot of the leading horror people from that time period, you will find that almost all of them have some kind of a porn background, that they either did production work or behind-the-scenes work. They were, all behind-the-scenes. But isn't it interesting that so many of them, when they crossed over and became legitimate, they went through violence?
Yeah, it's amazing. But that's the world we live in. That's the reality of our life. And that's a testament that somehow we're – I love how this book called The Sacred Matrix put it. It says that we're in a period of historical mental illness.
Yes.
And it's a great way of looking at it, that we are in kind of a spell, and that the best, and I love their solution, and that is to, you know, start building communities and start building groups and start building friends, that you begin to change this spell. You break, you weaken the spell when you start to get together on a conscious basis to live in a different community and in a different world. And that's without the idea of necessarily changing the world, but more with the idea of creating one little person at a time, your desire to create a life-oriented planet, or at least community within your own immediate surrounding.
Well, I believe that that is happening, and it's happening in a place in mid-Manhattan on the Midtown West Side called Sexy Spirits.
Hey, I like that. I like that a lot. That's certainly.
I don't want to put out the actual ad.
You don't have to. They can go to sexyspirits.com and they can find us. So
yes.
Absolutely. It's certainly a worthwhile goal. And, you know, I've been very fortunate enough to live here in one of the most amazing cities in the world and be able to bring this work forward. So I'm thrilled.
And I would say also a truly amazing apartment, I have to say also.
Yes. I'm very fortunate.
You have truly created a wonderland. Is this a good place for us to stop?
I would say, yeah, we could probably bring this to a close.
Okay.
It's been really great talking with you, Stephen.
Absolutely.
I really want to wish you the best in your radio show. I think you're going to be one of the best. I mean,
thank you.
For the time that you've been with Sexy Spirits, I've just, you know, you've been an absolute gift to what we do and what we're all about. And I don't think I could have gotten half of where I am now without you. So just want to thank you for that and really tell you how much I appreciate everything that you do.
Well, thank you. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to do that. You gave me a chance, a shot where nobody else would. And I, as soon as I came up to that place, I said, you know, I got to be here. I have to find a way to get myself in here, and I did.
Well, I know there's a big future for us, so let's keep going forward.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Anton, for being my guest tonight.
My pleasure, and I look forward to your other shows, and I wish you great success with them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
And I want to thank all you for listening this evening with me, and we will continue with our broadcasts in the following weeks to come. Thank you very much for listening to me. My name is Stephen Otero, and this is Mondo Eros. Good evening.